Welcome to the Shir Svarno, Parshas Baloscha, number of sponsors for tonight. First of all, Rabbi Moshe Malki Machlis, marking the yard site, which was today, of her father, the unforgettable Mr. Gawanter, Rabbi Avram Tzvibi, Rabbi Aaron, certainly a major, major presence and important, very important person, our shul. Dr. Philip Rubin is sponsoring Lili Nishmas, his mother. The first yard site is tonight. Estelle Rubin, Elka Reza, Bas Feitel Halevi, Shama should have an aliyah. And Susan Myers is sponsoring in memory of her father's yard site, which is tonight. Meir Ben Nachman Halevi, Mark Myers, all the neshama should have an aliyah. Should see much nachas ruach from the Torah, mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim that the respective families are involved in. Parshas Baloscha starts off with a description of the menorah. It's not the first time that the menorah is described. The mitzvah to light the menorah is described in Chumash, and although the Sfarah doesn't address this directly, we'll try a little bit later tonight to come back and address the question, why does the Torah keep talking over and over again about the lighting of the menorah? We had the lighting of the menorah was first introduced in Parshas Truma. It was introduced again at the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh. Now here it is in Parshas Baloscha. We had just skipped over a minute, we had the menorah was spoken about at the end of Parshas Emor. Okay, you know, we understand there's such a thing called the menorah, and there's a mitzvah to light it. Why does the menorah bear mentioning specifically over here? So, we're not going to answer that right away, but Be'ez Hashem will try to come back to that based on a comment that the Sfarno makes a little bit later on in the parasha. So that discussion of the menorah starts off with the famous words "Baloscha Saneros," that Aaron HaKohen is told when you raise the lights, when you raise the lamps, when you kindle the lamps of the menorah, "El mul pnei haMenorah yoiru shivas haneros." These seven lamps should shine opposite the face of the menorah. What does it mean that the lamps of the menorah should shine opposite the face of the menorah? So he writes the Sfarno as follows. Kishetadlik es sheish haneros, when you light the six lamps, three of which are on either side of the middle stem, the middle lamp of the menorah, they should be lit el mul pnei haMenorah, they should be lit in such a way that they cast light on the center of the menorah, shu'kana ha'emtsa'i, the middle stem of the menorah, which is to say, v'zeh kishetafne shalheves kol echad me'ashish oneros el hakana ha'emtsa'i. You should turn the wicks of the six lamps, the three on each side, in such a way that all of the wicks face inward towards the middle. And then, oz yo'iru shivas haneros. At that point, all seven lamps will shine. Right? So, what the Sfarno is picking up on in the Pasuk is that the last phrase, Yo'iru Shivas Haneros, the seven lamps will shine, doesn't really seem to fit with the beginning part of the Pasuk. In other words, if the beginning part of the Pasuk, El Mul Pnei haMenorah, means that the six lamps, the three on each side, should face inwards, so what does it mean that all seven lamps should face towards the middle? By definition, the middle lamp isn't facing towards the middle. It's not facing towards the middle. It is the middle. Right? So what do you mean, Yo'iru Shivas Haneros, that all seven lamps will shine? So the way the Sfarno understands this pasuk is that when you tilt the three lamps on either side towards the middle, then the seven lamps will function in the best possible way. The seven lamps will really work and shed light in the desired fashion. What's meant by that? So here the Sfarno comes and he tells us an important symbolism in the menorah and why there's this idea of the wicks facing inwards. When you do this, he says, "Kol hashiva yo'iru v'yashpiu or elyon liYisrael." All seven lamps will illuminate and they will exude a heavenly light, which will then come upon the Jewish people. How so? Shiyoru heyos or hayimonim v'or hasmolim mechuvan ufona el or hakona haemtsoi Shehu Ikar HaMenorah. The main part of the menorah is the middle stem. It's incredibly important that the lights on the right side and the lights on the left side all face inwards. In other words, that there's a commonality of purpose that the menorah is expressing, both from the lights on the left as well as on the lights on the right. What's the significance of left and right over here? So we know, certainly in politics, left and right have their meaning, but that's not what the Svarno is talking about over here. If I'm not mistaken, the left and right in terms of politics comes from the French Parliament, I think. You can correct me. You correct me if I'm wrong. You can even correct me if I'm right. But I believe in the French Parliament, the different parties sat on different sides of an aisle, and that's how we have the terms left and right in politics today. I believe that's correct. What's that? Yeah, okay, I'm not going to get into comments about, you know, left, right, who's right, you know, who's right and who's less right, but I think just the terminology of liberals versus conservatives, I think that comes from the French Parliament, if I'm not mistaken. All right, even if I am mistaken, I'm saying it, so, you know, okay, let's just go with that. What does left and right mean in Jewish life? So he says as follows. Shekein roi, the appropriate thing is as follows. Shekavonas haimayiminim ha'oskim b'chaye olam, v'hamasmi'ilim ha'oskim b'chaye sha'a, ha'ozrin l'mayiminim, tihiye l'hafik ritzon ha'kel yisparach. The quote-unquote right-wingers in Jewish life, says the Svarno, are those who are involved in Torah study predominantly. The people who are full-time learners, who are rebbeim, who are involved in the study and teaching of Torah as their primary preoccupation. Those who, quote-unquote, on the left, says the Svarno, are those who are involved in chaye olam. They're involved in pursuits of this world. Again, everybody's supposed to learn Torah to a degree, but, you know, primarily they spend their waking hours engaged in other pursuits, not primarily involved in the study and the teaching of Torah. It's important that both of those groups realize that they're working together for a common purpose, and that the wicks of both sides of the menorah, representing those two halves of Klal Yisrael, lean in towards the center, that they all have this goal of spreading God's light and His Torah throughout the Jewish people. Some people are involved directly in studying and teaching Torah. Others enable those who are studying and teaching Torah. They're involved in, you know, making sure that the world continues to function. Between those two groups, Yo'iru Shivas Haneros, the seven lamps are going to function properly, because only when those two groups realize that they're not in competition with one another, that they're not working against one another, it's not two different hashkafos or two different shittos, it's just two different paths that, you know, some people take this path and some people take that path, but ultimately everyone's supposed to be working together. And to this end, he quotes the Gemara in Chulin, Sadi Beis Amid Aleph. The Gemara says, Ilmole olaya, were it not for the leaves, lo miskayme iskalya, the clusters of fruit would not survive. What's that Gemara talking about? So the Gemara there in Chulin Daf Tzadi Beis points out how in Tehillim, Klal Yisrael is compared to a gefen, to a vine, to a vineyard, which is growing grapes. And the Gemara goes on to explain that just like the vineyard itself has different parts, so too Klal Yisrael has different parts. And among other things, the Gemara there says, the Talmidei Chachamim, who are involved in Torah study and teaching Torah, they're like the fruit, they're like the grapes of the vine. In other words, they're ultimately producing the juice, which is going to become the wine, which is what's desirable ultimately about the vineyard. But those who are involved in material pursuits, you know, they work for a living, they're like the leaves. If you don't have the leaves, says the Gemara, the fruit is going to be damaged. It's very nice to say that the fruit is the main thing, but, you know, you need the leaves in order to ensure that the fruit is going to be able to produce the juice, which is going to produce, ultimately, the wine. So everybody needs everybody else. And the Gemara there says in Masechta Chulin, Shalchu Mitam, the Rabbanim from Eretz Yisrael sent to the people living in Bavel, everyone should make sure to daven for the leaves. In other words, daven for those people in Klal Yisrael who are not involved in a full-time way in Torah study. Because were it not for the leaves, that's what the Sfarno quotes, Ilmale olaya, were it not for the leaves, lo miskaime yiskalya, the fruit would not be able to survive. We need everybody. We need the leaves, we need the fruit. So the Sfarno would take this mashal of the Gemara and apply it to the menorah. One side of the menorah represents the leaves, one side of the menorah represents the fruit, but everybody has to be on the same page. Everybody has to be focusing inward and realizing that they share a common goal in order for the menorah to work in the way in which it does. If that's the case, be'ofen shiyusag mechuvano ben kulam. The idea over here is that the menorah represents the fact that everybody in Klal Yisrael working together comes to the desired result, the desired achievement of sanctifying the name of Hashem. V'romamu Hashmo Yachtov, and everyone together will exalt Hashem's name together, kamo shekiblu aleihem, as we all accepted upon ourselves at Har Sinai. And here, again, we're coming right off of Shavuos. The Sfarno adds the following very, very beautiful insight, a very simple but very beautiful insight. Kasher heyid ba'omro vayanu chol ha'om yachtor vayomru kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. By Matan Torah, it says that the people were told by Moshe Rabbeinu what they were about to sign up for. You know, you'll be a, you know, Manleches Kanim v'goy Kadosh, you know, you'll devote yourselves to Torah. So all the people answered together and they said, Kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. Everything that Hashem has said, we will do. So the implicit question in the Sfarno is as follows. Again, we all know the famous words, Nasa v'nishma. We will perform and we will listen. Why is it in the plural? Why didn't every Jew say, Kol asher diber Hashem, e'eseh? Everything that Hashem said, I will do. Or, e'eseh ve'eshma. I mean, granted, it doesn't have the same ring to it. You know, e'eseh ve'eshma. But the truth is, every Jew should have said that. How can you commit on behalf of the other guy? What do you mean, na'aseh v'nishma? We will do. We will do and we will listen. E'eseh ve'eshma. Halavai that you should be able to commit yourself. You're ready to commit the guy next to you, the guy next to him. Who are you to talk for that other person? So says the Sfarno, the idea that the Torah is bringing out is as follows. The Torah ultimately is a group effort. There's no such thing as kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. Everything that Hashem did, that Hashem said, I will do. As other Mefarshim point out, the Sfarno doesn't point this out, but others are. Chaim in particular points this out. It's actually impossible for any one Jew to fulfill the totality of the 613 mitzvos. I mean, we speak very glowingly about, you know, we're going to do the 613 mitzvos. If you actually go through them, it's not possible for any one person to fulfill them. Some of those mitzvos are for Kohanim, some of them for Levim, some of them for Yisraelim. You know, you could be a talented guy, but you're probably not a Kohen and a Levi and a Yisrael. You know, that would take a level of talent that goes beyond the average person's abilities. So, by definition, again, this the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh points out, by definition, when we commit to the 613 mitzvos, we're doing so as a group, as a totality. That's what the Pasuk means. Kol asher diber Hashem, na'aseh, not e'eseh, not I'm going to do it. Na'aseh, we're going to do it, because we as a team, we as a group are going to do it. Klomar, says the Sfarno, what do they mean, na'aseh? Ben kulanu, nashlim kavanoso. Between all of us, we'll be able to complete and carry out that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. So that idea is the symbolism of the menorah. There are different groups in Klal Yisrael who have different assignments. You have to stick to your assignment. The fact that you have one assignment and the other person has a different assignment doesn't make you superior, doesn't make him inferior. It just means that we have different assignments in order to carry things out. There's a famous mashal, the Aruch HaShulchan, which again applies in different contexts, but certainly the Sfarno, you know, it would apply to the Sfarno as well. You know, if there's an orchestra which is playing a musical piece, every piece, every member of the orchestra has their role to play in the orchestra. If the guy on the triangle decides that he's going to start whacking the triangle nonstop throughout the musical piece, he's going to destroy it. His whole role as the one with the triangle is to give that little ding at the end of the piece, and even if that's the only thing he's doing, he's invaluable because he contributes to that piece. You know, that's the the pinnacle, you know, of the musical piece which is being performed. Everybody has their role to play, and everybody has to realize that they have their role to play. And that's the message of the menorah, Yo'iru Shivas Haneros, when everyone is facing in the same direction, facing inwards, so then Yo'iru Shivas Haneros. That idea that the menorah expresses the commonality and the unity of Klal Yisrael working together, says the Svarna, also comes out in what the Torah goes on to tell us in the very next pasuk. V'zeh maaseh ha-menorah, this is the way the menorah was made, miksha zahav, it was made out of a single piece of gold. So, what's the significance of that? So says the Svarna, as you could well imagine, v'zeh ha-tachlis ba'atzmo ha-mechuvan ba'hadlakas ha-neros, this idea which is expressed by the manner in which we light the lamps, i.e. that the wicks are all facing inwards, hu be'atzmo mechuvon be'inyin chiyuv heyos ha-menorah miksha. That very idea is expressed by the fact that the menorah is made from one solid piece of gold. It's not various pieces of gold that are attached to one another. Lahoros ha'achdus ha-mechuvon le'tachlis echad be'atzmo. That idea, the fact that it's one solid piece of gold, shows you that there's a commonality and a unity of purpose that all of Klal Yisrael is supposed to have. The Svarno presumably is drawing on this from the following, you know, basic question. The Torah over here is not just reviewing all of the halachas of the menorah. It doesn't get into all of the detail which is told to us in Parshas Truma about, you know, the kaftarim and the prachim, you know, all the different, you know, artistic depictions which were on the menorah. But somehow it's important to tell us that the menorah is made of a solid piece of gold. Two things you need to know about the menorah. The wicks face inward, and it's made from a solid piece of gold. Why those two things? Because those two things symbolically are really representing the same idea, namely that the menorah represents Klal Yisrael in all of its different parts coming together in order to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Skipping through the parsha a little bit, so we come to the beginning of Perek Tes, and Perek Tes introduces the parsha of Pesach Sheni. Right? First, it tells us that the second year that Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar, they were in the desert, it was just about a year after they had left Mitzrayim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, tell Klal Yisrael that they should make the Korban Pesach at the right time, on the 14th of Nisan, the second year after leaving Mitzrayim. We know there were some people who were unable to participate, they were Tameh, so they come to Moshe Rabbeinu, they say, why should we lose out? And Moshe Rabbeinu, at the word of Hashem, introduces to them the concept of the Pesach Sheni, that there's a sort of a makeup idea of bringing a Korban on the 14th of Iyar. So, one of the things that the Gemara in the beginning of Pesachim comments about in with regard to the parsha of Pesach Sheni is that we clearly see over here that Ein Muktam Uma'uchar Batara, that the Torah is not always written in chronological order. How do we know that? Well, because Perek Tes introduces the whole idea of the Korban Pesach. It says that the Korban Pesach, the mitzvah to bring the Korban Pesach the second time around, was told to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, of the second year when they left Mitzrayim. And Sefer Bamidbar as a whole opens up at the beginning of the month of Iyar, in that year after they left Mitzrayim. So in other words, the very beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, based on the chronology shared by the Torah itself, postdates what's told to us in Perek Tes, which was said a month earlier. So clearly you see, Ein Muktam U'Me'uchar B'Torah, that there's no chronological order in the Torah. Of course, that still begs the question, why would the Torah go out of chronological order? In other words, ordinarily, the most obvious way to order things would be in chronological order. So the Gemara is teaching us that the Torah doesn't always do things in chronological order, but even if there's no chronological order, there must be an order. In other words, the Torah isn't haphazardly just throwing around different ideas, you know, whatever occurs to it at any particular time. There's clearly a Seder, there's clearly an order. The only question is, what is the order? Obviously, it's not always chronological, but what is it? So the Svarno gives a fascinating interpretation. This is his comments to the beginning of Perek Tes. Achar shepokad anshei hatzava. So in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, the people who are eligible for military service are counted. V'sider hadgalim. And then we're told in Perek Beis, in the beginning of Bamidbar, about how the flags, how the standards are supposed to be set up. V'nosei hamishkan, and the Levim who are carrying the Mishkan are each given their assignments. Lachnisam la'aretz. All of these are meant to prepare Klal Yisrael to go into Eretz Yisrael, right? And those the first couple of Prakim and Sefer Bamidbar are basically organizing the machaneh, they're organizing the camp to get the Jews ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. Remember, pre the sin of the Meraglim, the understanding is that the Jews are at the cusp of going into Eretz Yisrael at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. And then we read in Perakei, V'tir machnea min atmeim, in the Parsha of Noso, we read about how people who are not eligible to be in the midst of the camp because they're Tomei, somebody who's a Mitzora, somebody who's a Zav, somebody who's a Tomei Mace, those people who have to be excluded from one or another camp within the camps of Klal Yisrael, so they are sent to their rightful places. Umin ha-mamzeirim be'inyan ha-sota, and we read about in last week's parasha the whole concept of sota. What's sota about? Ultimately, sota is also a way of ensuring that the camp is as pure as it can possibly be, because by having a tracing method to be able to see if a woman was unfaithful to her husband, it's a way of ensuring that they're not going to be mamzerim, or people born of an illicit relationship within Klal Yisrael. So all of that ensures lamantia shchina b'neim b'machad etzivosam. All of those steps ensure that the shchina, the divine presence, will rest in the Jewish camp in the best possible way. So now that the machaneh has been prepared, now that the camp has been prepared, and again that brought us through Perek He of Bamidbar, right, that talks about the sota. He doesn't address the issue of the nazir, how the nazir fits into this picture. The nazir is Perek Vav in Sefer Bamidbar, but we might suggest that the nazir is an avenue, as we saw last week in the Sfarno. The nazir, according to the Sfarno, is someone who prepares himself to be able to learn Torah intensively, and therefore he puts all other concerns and considerations on the side. So in order to prepare the Machane Yisrael to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael in the best possible way, the Torah says there's such a thing called a nazir, where you can really reach the highest heights of Kedusha and go into Eretz Yisrael properly. So now everything is prepared. So now, Sipir HaKosuv, Arba'a Maisim Tovim Sha'asu Yisrael, Shibohem Zachu Likanes La'aretz Miyad Bilti Milchama. At this point, after having organized the Jewish camp, the Torah's interest is to tell us about four different things that the Jewish people did in order to merit to go into Eretz Yisrael immediately without even having to fight a war. And here we reference back the Sfarno's remarks at the very beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. The Sfarno had told us that had the Jewish people been worthy, they not only would have been able to go into Eretz Yisrael at this point without having to wait 40 years, they would have waltzed into Eretz Yisrael, and the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael would have picked up and left. There wouldn't have been any fighting. No fighting. Right? Not even miraculous fighting. Just like Chazal tell us that the Girgashi picked up and left, they ran away, everybody would have run away. Right? That was the original plan, that Klal Yisrael was just going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and everybody was going to run away. There were four things that the Jewish people did to merit such a level, and Sefer Bamidbar is going to outline them for us. Rishona. So the first thing that the Torah tells us about as an example of an incredible act that Klal Yisrael did in order to merit coming to Eretz Yisrael right away, Siper Chanukas HaMizbeach. The story which we read about at the end of last week's Parsha Noso, beginning Perek Zayin, how the Nesiim dedicated the Mizbeach and the Mishkan, and of course we know, we read what's essentially the same paragraph 12 times over with minor differences, you know, describing how each of the Nesiim dedicated the Mishkan during the first 12 days of Nisan. Now, here the Sfarno is coming and answering a basic question which we should have asked last week when we read Naso. Why is the story of the Chanukas HaNesiim where it is? Chronologically, it's totally out of place. The Chanukas HaNesiim, now, that which the dedication of the Mishkan by the Nesiim, that all took place at the beginning of the first of the second Nisan, the beginning of the second year, just about a year after the Jews have left Mitzrayim, when the Mishkan was being dedicated. If you look back in the Torah, the events that are really described at the end of Naso are really taking place around the time of Parsha Shmini. Parsha Shmini, which describes the end of the period of the Miluim and the dedication of the Mishkan, describes that Rosh Chodesh Nisan, in which the Mishkan was dedicated, the terrible fate that befell Nadav and Avihu. But everything at that same time, that's when Nachshon ben Aminadav brought his karbon on behalf of the tribe of Yehuda. And then, you know, every day a different nasi, Nisano ben Suar, etc., 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 you know, for the next 12 days, that's when they brought the karbonos. So the end of Parshas Naso should have been back in Parshas Shmini. So why is it, how did it slip through the cracks and somehow get transposed from Shmini all the way to Naso? Chronologically, it's totally out of order. So the Sfarno says the reason that it makes its way into Naso is because it's trying to tell us the following. The fact that the Nasiim acted with such alacrity and such love in dedicating the Mishkan was a schus, it was a source of merit for Klal Yisrael to enable them to go into Eretz Yisrael right away. Right? That's the role that whole parsha plays in the place that it does. Shenis, the second, is Rizusum b'inyan chinuch ha-Leviim. The beginning of Parshas Baloscha, it tells us how the Leviim were selected, and Klal Yisrael right away went and they dedicated the Leviim and consecrated them to begin their service in the Mishkan. Why does that speak positively of Klal Yisrael? I mean, after all, why is that different than the Miluim? The Miluim was the consecration of the Kohanim. So in the beginning of Baloscha, we read about the consecration of the Leviim. Okay, they consecrated Kohanim, they consecrated Leviim. What is it about the consecration of the Leviim that somehow is considered to be an incredible schus that enables Klal Yisrael to go into Eretz Yisrael right away? The answer would seem to be that the Kohanim weren't hurting anybody. The Leviim knocked out the Bechoros. The Leviim took the place of the firstborn who previously were on the pedestal, who were supposed to serve in the Mishkan, right? As the Pesukim make clear, you know, the Leviim basically were taken by the Ribbono Shel Olam as a substitute for the Bechorim. So you could have easily seen Klal Yisrael saying, what do you mean? Leviim? We're not interested in Leviim. The Bechorim are the ones who are entrusted with this incredible privilege of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan. Right? There was, you know, as far as we can tell, at least according to the Sfarno's understanding, there's no revolt of the Bechorim at any point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and says, you know, new plan, scrap the Bechorim, we're putting in Leviim instead, and Klal Yisrael jump. And they say, yes, we're going to consecrate the Leviim. We should just point out, by the way, this stands in contrast to an Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra understands that the rebellion of Korach, in part, was about the Bechorim saying, no way, no how, right? That, no, we're not going to accept the Leviim taking our place, right? But that's the Ibn Ezra. The Sfarno doesn't learn like that. Most of the Mefarshim understand that the incident with Korach happens much later on anyway, right? The Ibn Ezra uniquely says that the incident with Korach happens earlier than the way the Torah describes it as happening. Korach happens before Parshas Korach, so to speak. You know, happens right after the story of the Egel Azov. But again, that's the Ibn Ezra. The Sfarno doesn't understand like that. The Sfarno understands, like the simple pshat, that when the Jews were told, okay, we're going to take the Leviim instead of the Bechorim, the Jews say, okay, Gevaldik, if that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, that's what we're going to do. And that readiness to accept that, even though in a sense it was a slap in the face, you know, to the Bechorim, to the firstborn, the readiness of Klal Yisrael to accept that was yet another schus for Klal Yisrael to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. Be'ezus Hashem will pick up tomorrow with the third and the fourth of these schusim, so it'll be a continuation. Then we'll talk about the Korban Pesach, and then Be'ezus Hashem will bring it back, you know, to our discussion about the menorah that we started with tonight. So Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah.